So be ready to see malate turning to oxaloacetate or vice versa in either of those environments, cytosol or mitochondrial matrix. And then you're ready for everything.
So it's not actually coming out of the TCA cycle, it's happening simultaneously, possibly simultaneously?
Yeah, this is going on in the cytosol. I do want to start keeping track of where this is a little more carefully. So this is the start of the shuttle in the cytosol. And right now I have malate in the cytosol. But what's kind of cool about malate having the electrons now is that malate is allowed into the mitochondrial matrix. It goes through a doorway for it in the inner mitochondrial membrane. So the next thing to think about in this shuttle is the malate changing where it is. It goes into the matrix. It has the electrons. The electrons have started here in the left diagram. The malate has them and has carried them into the mitochondrial matrix now. And then to get the electrons closer to the electron transport chain, the malate in the matrix becomes oxaloacetate in the matrix. And that is the step that you seem so aware of in the matrix for the TCA cycle. And turns, just like we learned when we studied the TCA cycle, turns NAD pluses in the matrix into NADHs in the matrix. And boy, are we ready to go into the electron transport chain of these electrons now, because NADHs in the matrix can give their electrons to complex 1.
So malate just goes back and forth between the cytosol and matrix?
The malate can go both directions through the inner mitochondrial membrane. So, yeah, I would agree that malate can go back and forth between the mitochondrial matrix and the cytosol. Electrons, complex 1, is that right here? The electron transport chain. That's the shuttle that takes electrons from the cytosol to the electron transport chain.
Thank you.
And then sure. About the other shuttle, that the electrons miss complex 1?
Correct. The glycerol 3-phosphate shuttle.
Yes.
Is the other shuttle. And the electrons that make it to the electron transport chain by that shuttle are carried by glycerol 3-phosphate to the mitochondrial version of glycerol 3-phosphate dehydrogenase, which has an FAD inside. And the electrons are given to FAD. FAD turns into FAD2H and then gives the electrons to coenzyme Q. By this time, everyone would agree the electrons are in the electron transport chain, but they never went through complex 1. Nor did they go through complex 2. Yeah, they didn't go through complex. There is some confusion, it seems, on what exactly is complex 2 in that picture. Figure 21.5, where we find complex 2 and some other things. Exactly what part of that picture is complex 2. Somebody might want me to come point to that.
I have a question about learning objective 13. I can come up with 30 entities, and out of 2, I was thinking it might be the malate shuttle, but I don't know why the 2 is, in the case.
So, have you used either one of the shuttles in your calculation yet?
No.
Or your tally yet? Well, you need to think about the shuttles, and it's exactly because of the shuttles, you know. It's exactly because of the shuttles that there's a range. You could come up with 30, or you could come up with 31, or you could come up with 32, depending on which shuttle or combination of shuttles is used. Let me show you. I do have sort of my favorite way to diagram that, as a matter of fact. Can I get rid of this? Let me tell you that if you are presented with a question like, explain how one glucose can lead to 30 to 32 ATPs, and you're nicely able to explain forming, I'll just make up a number here, 28. You can explain 28 of them without making anything up. And then you decide that your goal is really to make it come out to be 32. And you're going to make something up to make it be 32. By golly, I'm just going to invent something and have it be 32. Well, you just made your answer worse instead of better by making something up. Come on. Stick with the 28 that you got and call it four short. Don't make something up to make it 32. You made your answer worse and you start making things up. Okay. One glucose. And the first step in getting anything from it is having it go through glycolysis. Now I'll represent all of the glycolysis with just one arrow here. But some things I want to remember is that from the one glucose, I'll get two pyruvates. And along the way, two NADHs and two ATPs. That would be the main things to remember about glycolysis for this talent. And we're trying to really say how many ATPs can be made. So the question comes up, how many ATPs are these NADHs worth? The answer is it depends. It depends on the channel you use to send the electrons to the electron transport. There's two shuttles. This is where the uncertainty comes that led me to say 30 to 32 to offer a range. You see, if both of these NADHs send their electrons on the glycerol free phosphate shuttle, then the NADHs are worth only 1.5 ATPs each. And the two of them together would be worth only 3 ATPs. If one of the NADHs sends its electrons on the glycerol free phosphate shuttle, that NADH is worth 1.5 ATPs. And the other NADH sends its electrons on the other shuttle, the malate shuttle, that second NADH is worth 2.5 ATPs. So if I add those together, 1.5 and 2.5, because of a combination of the two shuttles being used, I come up with 4 ATPs. And you can see where I'm going. There's one more possibility. If both NADHs send their electrons to the electron transport chain by the malate shuttle, then they'd both be worth 2.5 each. Each be worth 2.5, or together 5 ATPs. So when we get to adding all the ATPs together in the end, this is the part that's going to lead to it could all add up to 30, or it could all add up to 31, or it could all add up to 32, depending on which of these numbers we use. The next thing to think about is the pyruvates, the jolly pyruvates, entering the mitochondrial matrix and being turned by the PVC reaction into acetyl groups of acetyl derivatives to event. And something to not forget about the PVC reaction is that it produces NADH in the mitochondrial matrix. So from two pyruvates going through this reaction, we would get two NADHs in the mitochondrial matrix.
And
because they're in the mitochondrial matrix, no shovels are needed. They can just swim up to complex one and give their electrons to complex one. Meaning that both of these NADHs are worth 2.5 ATPs each. The two of them together are worth 5. NADHs in the mitochondrial matrix are worth 2.5 ATPs. We're getting close. Really, all we need to think about now is the TCA cycle and oxidative phosphorylation. Because we got two acetyl groups from a glucose, or two acetyl CoAs, the TCA cycle can turn two times. Each time it turns, it makes three NADHs. From it turning twice, it makes six NADHs. In the mitochondrial matrix, so it went 2.5 ATPs each. And each time the TCA cycle turns, it makes one FAD2H. Therefore, if it turns twice, it would make two FAD2Hs. And each time it turns, it makes one GTP. So from it turning twice, it would make two GTPs. Now we just need to say how many ATPs these things are worth, and we can add them all up and we'll have the answer. This is my favorite Wick diagram. It's pretty succinct and shows you where everything came from, in my opinion. The NADHs are in the mitochondrial matrix, so they're worth 2.5 each. Six of them would be worth altogether 15 ATPs. The FAD2Hs, well, those would be the flavine adenine dinucleotides that are in complex 2. The electrons, in other words, that these FAD2Hs possess never go through complex 1. And I'm presenting the argument for why these FAD2Hs are worth only 1.5 ATPs apiece. The two of them together would be worth 3 ATPs, therefore. And the GTPs are equivalent to ATPs. So the two GTPs would be worth 2 ATPs. And if you add all the ATPs that I've circled now up, you come up with a total of 30 or 31 or 32. Find the ones you were missing? Did you straighten yours out?
Mm-hmm. I did.
You found most of them on your own. That's good.
I'm confused about glucagon signals and fructose 2,6-bisphosphate in liver cells.
Where glucagon signals cause the level of fructose 2,6-bisphosphate in liver cells to go down. Yeah. Where do you get confused? Can you put your finger on it, Sonia?
I wish I could. I think maybe understanding my own notes is probably part of the difficulty, to be honest. But I think if I could maybe go over how the enzyme works again, that might be helpful.
So the enzyme she's mentioning is the liver's
version
of PFK2/F26PDAs. That's the long-winded way to refer to this bifunctional enzyme. GFK2, when it's on, catalyzes a reaction that makes F2,6 bisphosphate. The other part of this enzyme is a phosphatase called fructose-2,6 bisphosphatase, ASEN, that's an enzyme. And what it catalyzes when it's on is it catalyzes the destruction of fructose-2,6 bisphosphate. What a two-faced enzyme. It's the most two-faced enzyme I ever saw. It's got these two different parts of it that are tied together by being different parts of the same molecule, and the reactions they catalyze are as opposite as that. One of them makes fructose-2,6 bisphosphate, and the other one destroys fructose-2,6 bisphosphate. What a two-faced enzyme. Well, it turns out that, to be kind of simple-minded about it, only one side of it is on at a time.
Right.
And which side of it's on depends on whether it's dephosphorylated, like I've drawn thus far, or phosphorylated. When it's phosphorylated, it has a different shape than when it's dephosphorylated. And the liver's version responds to being phosphorylated this way. When the liver's version of this enzyme is phosphorylated, this side of it is off, and this side of it is on. So it becomes a destroyer. Destroyer of fructose-2,6 bisphosphate. Glucagon messages lead to putting that phosphate on, making this be a destroyer.
I think that's the part that was missing.
Is there still more that you need to hear?
I'm sure I can find it in my notes, but I'm not remembering how it's phosphorylated.
Oh, okay. Yes. Connecting those dots. How is it that glucagon messages lead to a phosphate group being put onto this enzyme? Glucagon messages always lead to protein kinase A coming on. And I can retrace those steps if you needed me to. Glucagon sits down on a glucagon receptor. Receptor changes its shape. The G protein changes its shape. Activates the variant cyclase, cyclic AMP, then activates protein kinase A. Yeah, I kind of like to go fast.
Okay.
Now, protein kinase A catalyzes phosphorylations of proteins like that one. Now we've connected those dots.
Protein kinase A. That's where I thought it was.
I have a question about the diagram on page 557 that shows glycolysis and gluconeogenesis side by side. In my notes, I'm a little confused, and it might be that I just wrote something wrong in my notes. I wrote 2 equals 2 NADH, but when I'm looking at it, this is inaccurate. It says NADH2 in that step. Is that accurate?
That's correct. But instead of happening just once, it would happen twice. If you started with 2 pyruvates and tried to make a whole glucose, this step would have to happen twice.
Oh, so I'm getting the 2 NADH on this side. I'm just trying to see like what I was talking about.
What you're talking about is going from 2 pyruvates to a glucose would require this step to happen twice. And that explains why gluconeogenesis from pyruvate to glucose costs 2 NADHs.
That's the cost, not an addition.
It's a cost. It costs 2 NADHs. The net equation for gluconeogenesis, which part of this can I erase?
Okay.
the net reaction for gluconeogenesis from two pyruvates. The one glucose shows that we also have to spend four ATPs and two GTPs and two NADHs for this pathway, and what you and I just explained is spending these two NADHs. We found a step where that happens. A step that happens twice, crossing an NADH each time. A step that in glycolysis went the other direction and was the only redox step in glycolysis. But now for gluconeogenesis, goes the other direction. In glycolysis, this reaction I'm talking about the reaction involving nicotinamide and dinucleotide. In glycolysis, that reaction uses NAD plus and makes NADH, but in gluconeogenesis, it goes the other direction. It uses NADH and makes NAD plus.
And then in this diagram, again, it shows. Like, I know it's not, I'm trying not to think of gluconeogenesis as an exact reverse. I'm wondering why they show this. They're just showing an alternate way you can get to glucose by showing the glycerol there. I mean, if I'm thinking of gluconeogenesis, I'm wanting to think of it as a nice straight line.
Okay. If you want to think of gluconeogenesis as a nice straight linear pathway, think of it as from pyruvate to glucose.
Okay.
But then these other things have to find their way onto that path. Glycerol is one of the things that has to find its way onto that path. And so, how does glycerol get onto that path? Well, in a two-step way, the glycerol becomes glycerol-3-phosphate, which then becomes DHAP. DHAP is part of the main.
So is it a necessary part?
No, you don't have to start with glycerols, but to the extent that you have glycerols, this is the way that they would be used.
Okay.
Liver cells know how to use the glycerol. Only liver cells have that enzyme that gets the use of glycerol started. The enzyme called glycerol kinase turns glycerol into glycerol-3-phosphate. Only liver cells have the enzyme glycerol kinase to put glycerol to use that way.
Can you go over the electron carriers and complex two?
The electron carriers and complex two. Well, that was flavin, adenine, dinucleotide, and some iron sulfur receptors, as I recall.
Transferring flavoprotein somewhere in my notes that I maybe I put it there randomly.
I think you're talking about the one they colored blue.
That's probably true. That's something that you.
No, I haven't used that word, that terminology, electron transferring flavoprotein.
Thank you.
Yeah, and probably what they were talking about when you read that in the book is they were talking about the way that some electrons come in this doorway.
Okay.
Which I described this way. I described it as a doorway for electrons from the FAD2Hs made by beta oxidation. So it's long-winded. I kind of find myself needing to say all that to describe what goes in there. Electrons from the FAD2Hs made by beta oxidation go in there.
I have a question that somebody else wanted me to ask for them. Why are they called bisphosphate instead of biphosphate?
Well, we've seen diphosphates. I don't think we've ever seen biphosphates. We've seen diphosphates and now bisphosphates, and so what's the difference between them? Yeah. Kind of changing your question, is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Because biphosphates isn't really something we run into, but diphosphates would be when, let's see, here's my phosphates. There's two of them. I'm a diphosphate. Mm-hmm. I'm a diphosphate. I'm a bisphosphate. Did that do it?
Yes.
And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, they have this term pyrophosphate, which kind of means the same thing as diphosphate. So you've got phosphate on top of phosphate.
I have another missing piece. It's in the question that's talking about a cell that's deprived of oxygen and all the things that may or may not happen. And I, the glycolysis increases, right?
Yes.
And then I didn't, yeah, I'm not sure I have enough detail for what you might be looking for in terms of the last.
Well, we kind of came to that idea twice, once in the learning objectives for oxidative phosphorylation, and then again near the end of the learning objectives for glycolysis, which I'm going to be dealing with right now. Oxidative phosphorylation,
yes.
And glycolysis.
Oxidative phosphorylation.
So in the learning objectives for oxidative phosphorylation, we described a cell that was deprived of oxygen. And it kind of went like this. All the aerobic stuff slows down.
Right.
And we explained it as step-by-step as we could, how it all slows
down. Fine
for me. And then I asked you to predict what would happen to the rate of glycolysis in this cell, just to try and test your intuition a little bit.
Because, well, you move into anaerobic you need to produce ATP anaerobically.
Yes.
And if you do so anaerobically, then you
So would it be beneficial for that to speed up right now?
Right, because
yes.
You're working less energy. Or less ATP.
We're talking about a cell that needs ATP, like mad, it needs ATP,
okay.
But it's unable to make enough ATP aerobically. Hopefully, it'll speed up its anaerobic production of ATP. That's what would be beneficial, it seems to me, and it does work out that way, that glycolysis speeds up. It wasn't until...
I got a little confused in thinking about the... So you don't make as much ATP anaerobically, is that...
Right, but it's making as much aerobically as it can, and now it's supplementing that with ATP that makes anaerobically.
Okay.
And ideally, it's speeding up that anaerobic business, because it's kind of having trouble with the aerobic business when it runs out of oxygen. It wasn't until way more recently, maybe it was today, that I got around to explaining what factor it is that leads to glycolysis speeding up. I think it was objective 18 for glycolysis, the very last one. Yeah, the glycolysis learning objectives, which I didn't finish until this morning. Objective number 18, I think that was this morning.
Okay.
Is
it the AMP?
It was the AMP that allowed me to explain why glycolysis would speed up. In this cell that's having trouble meeting its needs for ATP, the level of AMP rises, and then AMP activates phosphofructokinase 1. I want you to be able to say exactly which enzyme of glycolysis the AMP is activated. PFK1, phosphofructokinase 1, is the enzyme that's being activated by the AMP.
Okay.
the thermogenesis? And
yeah, but I need you to say that enzyme, like an enzyme name, with an MSE ending.
Oh, sorry. Fructose 1,6 bisphosphatase.
Much better.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't told the class that yet.
Oh, yes.
But you're right that AMP, at the same time that it's activating glycolysis, it also inhibits glucuronogenesis. Chance to tell you that right after the test. I haven't told the class.
Have we handled this three ways to regenerate NAD plus?
Yes. You're talking about the NAD plus that glycolysis needs. What are the three ways to regenerate that NAD plus that glycolysis needs? There's one anaerobic way, and that involves formation of lactate. And then there's two aerobic ways. Those are the shuttles.
Okay, so that's the alanine, or no, I think it's...
The shuttles are the glycerol 3-phosphate shuttle and the malate shuttle, I'll call it. Malate aspartate shuttle or malate shuttle. Kind of like shortening its name to malate shuttle, but the learning objective calls it malate aspartate. You see, those shuttles accomplish two things. Either shuttle would accomplish these two things. Not only does it take electrons to the electron transport chain, which is going to help this cell make energy, but also the shuttles regenerate NAD plus for glycolysis to continue. The shuttles begin by turning NADHs in the cytosol into NAD pluses again. And that allows glycolysis to continue. That's a pretty important thing accomplished by these shuttles. And your question helped me remember. That's an important thing about these shuttles.
My tutoring session ended right there. I was like, I want to know. I can't find it in my notes. So that's why it didn't stick out in my head, because in talking about those shuttles, I was thinking more about how, correct me if I'm wrong, I was thinking of the shuttles as how they change forms to get where they need to go. Is that inaccurate to think of it that way?
I guess the term shuttle is not a real precise term, and that we'll use it in a variety of different stories. But the shuttles that we've been talking about most recently are about the two things I just said, taking electrons to the electron transport chain from the cytosol, and also returning NADHs in the cytosol to being NAD pluses again so that glycolysis can continue. The shuttles by name are glycerol 3-phosphate shuttle and malate aspartate shuttle. Either one of those would accomplish the two things I just said.
You would refer to conversion to lactate and lactate shuttle. What would be the accurate way to describe? If that was a question, what would be the accurate way to describe?
Sort of the way the learning objective referred to it would be my favorite way to refer to it. The conversion of pyruvate to lactate is the anaerobic way to regenerate the NAD plus that glycolysis needs to continue. And I might also speak of it as the anaerobic fate of pyruvate, which is to turn into lactate. And, you know, until you don't need to anymore, practice the enzyme's name for that lactate dehydrogenase. Know that reaction that it catalyzes backwards and forwards. Because sometimes we see lactate turning to pyruvate, going the other direction. And in fact, we did that today for or look at gluconeogenesis, where lactate is a precursor for building glucose in liver cells. And the very first step of using lactate in that way or any other way is to turn the lactate into pyruvate by having this reaction go the other direction. So, I kind of need to do something for you that you and I did on another question a minute ago. Connect this to glucagon signals. Connect this to glucagon signals.
Need to review that.
We could kind of fast forward from glucagon sitting down on the liver cell to protein kinase A coming on. And then protein kinase A catalyzes phosphorylation of pyruvate kinase. That's one way to turn the pyruvate kinase off. That's something a liver cell would want to do, or I would want my liver cells to do, when my liver cells are supposed to be making glucose instead of using glucose. You see, if I remember the last two steps of glycolysis, two phosphoglycerate becomes PEP, and then PEP becomes pyruvate. And this very last step where the PEP becomes pyruvate is an irreversible step. It's a control spot that's catalyzed by pyruvate kinase. And glycolysis wants to use PEP that way. But gluconeogenesis wants to use PEP that way. You see, that's a reversible step. It goes one direction for glycolysis and the other direction for gluconeogenesis, and it kind of works like this. You turn that enzyme on, the controllable one, then this begins to accumulate, and the reversibility of this reaction begins to manifest. Goes the other direction. That's a key event in having liver cells go from being glucose users to being glucose producers instead in the fasting state. This school, when somebody sneezes during a test, there's about 20 different bless you, don't know. This school is different in so many ways.